Welcome to Reality Sandwich. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco Healthful Living's radio show every Thursday at noon, where we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, the planet, our collective shared social reality here in the world. I am very happy to be here today with my co-host, Jan Lundberg. How's it going, Jan?
Great, Martin. It is great to be here.
There is so much going on in our world right now, and so much that we're not taking total responsibility for, that we're not really owning up to, that we're letting get away from us, I feel.
Yeah, we think that we have institutions to take care of things, that experts take care of things, that all we're supposed to do is vote once in a while and maybe use the recycling bins. But we're up against so much, as you say, so much going on, that we have to take much more responsibility and make for a cultural revolution.
It's definitely revolutionary times. I mean, we live in a world where we can have choice over life or death. I'm just going to tout off just for a quick moment or two. We have a free speech radio. I'm very honored to be on the air. But I have got to just express my absolute dismay at the behavior of, let's just point it out, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Here's a man who had the ability to wield tremendous power. And when chosen to do so, when chosen to have the ability to determine life or death, he himself gave away that choice. I don't think he was had the balls, had the whatever you want to say, to actually make a human decision about the life or death of another human being.
But he did. He chose death.
No, he chose to stand behind other people's interpretations of rules and laws and things and stuff and all this crap that we make up, that we determine and externalize our responsibility to a set of rules, whether or not they really apply in what's happening today. And he ignored those things.
Well, it's not that much of a surprise. The system is death-oriented. The system relies on terror, on fear, on keeping people in line, trying to make them feel lucky to have some things to consume. And so it's not really a surprise to me.
I understand that the system is set up this way, and the system supports these things. And yeah, that sucks. And here's an opportunity where one man had a supreme power to truly make his own choice about whether, yeah, all that stuff, and we know that it sucks, and we know the system is bad, and we know that it's political, sure. But one person given the opportunity to make a supreme choice about whether to continue to believe and support all that crap or to make his own personal human choice about understanding the nature of the circumstance, the individual, their history, their life, society, all these things, and decide over life or death.
Sure,
and this
Martin,
moron.
But people shouldn't have that ability.
But
there shouldn't be
one
person.
I agree, but he did.
And you know, something else that comes
he
up here.
He did have it.
It shows blatantly that there's no idea of rehabilitation, that you do your time, you do good, you reform, you help other people, you're no longer a threat to society. What happens? You get killed anyway many, many years after the fact, after a questionable trial. So that shows us that there's a prison industry, that the system needs the virtual slave labor of the work and industry going on in prisons, that you have very powerful entities running our interests. So it's no different from oil companies and car companies dictating energy and transportation policy for prison industries and prison guard unions to dictate whether there's more prisons built and how people are treated there.
It disgusts me that it is that we live in a society where so many of us allow this person to govern us and to have the ability to choose over life or death and to choose death.
Well, that's
and
not...
for us to see what that means now, I think we're going to, this is going to penetrate throughout, hopefully throughout all the hearts of our society, ultimately to deal with and understand the true ramifications of what we've created here, of the system that we've created here that supports this, that allows this, that does precisely what you says, that there is no redemption. So we're truly embedding the notion of hopelessness throughout our entire society here with this example.
Well, that's why we're talking on the air, trying to give people some tools for self-determination, self-reliance. And I think it's going to come down to our daily living, our lifestyles, how our society, our neighborhoods, our economics works. Because if we hand over all power to distant corporations, distant government leaders, bureaucracies, then whatever comes down on us is going to be our own fault. So we have to look at what we're doing to disempower ourselves, mm-hmm. what weakens us. And as you know from my background working on petroleum dependence,
right.
that is a prime way to take control of our own lives and save money, clean up the environment, have more community with people. And, you know, I was able to talk to people on the bus on the way over here. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, riding in my car alone, and I don't have a car, but I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah. Precisely. Precisely. It is this notion of really stopping and looking at where we are at. We being this collective, and you and I are both sharing the same conversation, we, this collective of human beings on this planet, stopping and looking at how the heck are we doing in all these areas of our existence, in all these areas of our existence, and what is showing up in reality as a result of our behaviors in the past? What's not working?
Civilization.
Exactly.
We have
societal structures, our ways of interacting, the way that we treat our minds, the way that we treat our bodies, the way that we treat our planet.
And I think it's culture. So culturechange.org is my bag, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had to go deeper than political campaigns, transportation policy, energy policy. And so when you look at Western civilization as an outgrowth of a mutant culture that practiced totalitarian agriculture, that built cities so that there could be surpluses for the wealth of the elite. And it went from there to empire, started in the Mesopotamia area, and now the serpent is biting its own tail. The successor of all this Western civilization, the most powerful Western civilized nation in the world, the U.S., is now trying to devour and destroy the very cradle of its own civilization to profit off of war and to try to control oil.
Which is what fuels really everything in our world. Fuels our ability to create stuff, to eat. Really feeds the sustenance right now of the human race.
It's almost unimaginable what kind of a society and set of technological tools we would have if we got rid of petroleum. If you just think about the plastics, all the power required for the manufacture and construction of things, and the electricity to run all these gadgets and machines.
To create
fuels.
Pesticides, to be able to grow our food.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, if you do eat food that is slathered in pesticides, some of us choose not to.
Well,
but for most of America, and in fact most of the world, its food creation, its ability to grow stuff, is now dependent upon these pesticides made by these huge monster companies, of which petroleum is a requirement, right, in order to create
these. Yeah, and just as important as the artificial fertilizers, most of which come from natural gas.
Right.
Then you have the petroleum fuels for the tractors, the very tillage. Tilling the land with these heavy machines compacts the soil. And this is very bad in the long run.
Right.
And then you have the distribution from petroleum fuels. The wrapping is plastic. The preparation of the food is through your electric range or your gas range. And then we think that we have to refrigerate everything. These ways of exercising modern convenience and putting profits in the pocket of mega corporations is very short-sighted. We have to question everything. That's the age we're living in, where we have to question everything, to question authority, mm-hmm. to question technology, mm-hmm. and to see how we can live a better way.
And question for your own sake and for the sake of all existence, not just a question to question. Because when somebody talk about we have to question things, sometimes people go, oh, you're always questioning things. You're always being the rebel. Well, you know what? A lot of what's showing up isn't really working for us. How's your 401k doing? How's your health? How's your heart? How's the weight of your children? How's your asthma?
We're barely scratching the surface.
How's your government doing? How are the state of local economic affairs? How many homeless people are in your neighborhood right now? Do you feel safe walking down the street? How do you feel as an American traveling around the globe? So, I could stop. I will stop right there, but how's it going? Well, yeah, that leads to questions. What's happening? How are we being involved in it? Is it happening to us? Is there really some organization to all of this? And whether there is or not, you were talking about, it's making me think of this notion of evolution, right? You have to stop and look at these things, but depending on where you are, some people think it's just great. Some people may say this is natural evolution.
Well, that's what they're told.
Parties get smarter, they organize, they realize they can take advantage of the other because the other has become dependent upon them in some way because they have perhaps connection to some resource that we've become dependent upon.
Well, a gang stole the land.
Sure.
And called it law and government.
Right.
And it goes on today. Things can be quasi-legal or by force. And so when you have a population growing, there's going to be more strife within that population. Mm-hmm. So instead of a village society where disputes could be easily taken care of by people who know both parties and, violence quelled in a peaceful way, we have more and more people bumping into one each other, more disputes.
Right.
There's more competition for land and resources. And so today we have to live a lie. We have to live a myth that this is all progress, that it's okay that we don't have any connection to the land.
Mm.
Why? Because we have cash and petroleum. Well, with what I call petro-collapse, those things aren't going to do you much good. We're going to have to start getting our food out of our local environment as human beings did for thousands and thousands of years. We're going to have to do business with local people. We're going to have to know our neighbors. And this sounds strange probably to the rest of the world, whoever might be listening on KPOO.com, but Americans are full of themselves with ideas that really don't wash when there's a connection to family and to the land mm-hmm. and community that all other countries really are better at.
Yeah. Well, we in America have so far disconnected ourselves from our internal hearts, both because we've strived for more and more stuff, and people have been giving us our thoughts and our ideas about what is life and how we have to consume and how we have to grow and be and get a bigger car and make more money and all these things. We've become so disconnected from the land and from that truly indisputable nature of our interconnectedness. We don't acknowledge it anymore because we've become so afraid, we're so kept in fear, we're so kept consuming, and we strive ceaselessly for something that we can never attain, this inner peace, this inner joy. It is kind of sad when I really stop to think about how, I mean, you walk on the bus and you'll say hi to somebody and they'll turn the other way because, oh, it's a stranger. Ooh, don't talk to strangers.
Well, that's the higher population factor working right there. When we're talking about personal responsibility and what's going on that we're allowing certain things that are part of our culture or politics because people are getting away with it, let's talk about San Francisco and the fee on plastic bags that was supposed to be implemented several months ago. What happened was the Department of Environment, the Commission on the Environment, and the public approved, demanded a fee of at least 17 cents on plastic and paper bags at the supermarket checkout stand level. Now, all of that would not have been an extra cost to anyone, really, when you look at the fact that that's what it already costs the city of San Francisco to take care of the waste, and those are funds spent on that that could be spent on other things, mm-hmm. such as for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been a way to put the cost right at the user level and make people think about what they're doing, like consuming extra pounds of petroleum over
right.
a given amount of time that they think is free, and it isn't. Nothing's free. Energy is very, very much built into everything we buy, our goods and services. So there was one more study ordered by the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco to look at the effects of a bag fee. And what happened was the mayor sat on this, and it has never been approved. But what did happen behind the scenes with lobbying on Gavin Newsom to not approve a bag fee is that the plastics industry demanded that that this not be adopted. And some say that Newsom figured his political future lay not in what the public demonstrated at hearing after hearing for a bag fee, but rather on what powerful polluting interests demand.
Mm.
And so instead, a little deal has been made whereby the supermarkets and maybe the plastic bag industry will help cut back on plastic bag use in the city of San Francisco to the tune of 10 million bags a year. And this is about 10% of what could be done. In Ireland, where they passed a 15-cent fee on bags, overnight there was a 90% disappearance
mm-hmm.
of plastic bags trashing the environment.
Right. But we're too afraid to give people the responsibility. I mean, that would actually affect change, which might mess with certain people's commerce. I mean, isn't that the idiotic standpoint that we're really supporting by allowing our... Well, I don't know if we say
that,
allow, but it does happen, right? I mean, you've given a prime example here where, you know, corporate interests who could have their financial wherewithal messed with in some way, which could somehow mess with their ability to push stuff.
Well, that's the way it works. Now, if we can't fight politically and make sure that Newsom is defeated
mm-hmm.
for this sellout, for this anti-Earth, ridiculous, nonsensical betrayal, then we have to simply adopt things in our own lives. And this is the real lesson. Reforming the system may be impossible. The system is destroying itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like... motorized lemmings driving off the ecological cliffs, which I think we've mentioned before in this show. So if we can't really expect responsibility from the Newsoms, the Schwarzeneggers, the Bushes, and the rest of them, then it comes down to us.
Exactly.
And so we don't have to take that plastic bag.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways of dealing with it on the political level. Sure, we can vote. We cannot vote. But we really need to disarm and disempower the powerful interests who depend on all the consuming
right.
for their dollars. The economy is basically driven by consumer spending.
Exactly.
That is a big
weakness. Consumer ignorance around their spending as well.
Well, right.
Disempowerment and absolute disconnection with what happens with their money.
Well, look at the car. They think they need a car. But the average speed of the American motorist is only about 5 miles per hour if you factor in all the time
right.
involved to earn the money to buy the car, to repair the car, to buy the insurance, the
right.
gasoline, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, and there's such a huge health cost. People think, oh, health is just something out of my control. I'm just a poor working person, and I have to get diseases, be overweight, sit in my car, take orders from people, have a job that's dispiriting, and then watch politicians sell me out. Well, if that's the way it feels, then that is a hopelessness
right.
that really is just waiting for a disaster, a big surprise, which I call petro-collapse.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be seeing this winter around the country and probably the world a very swift rise in heating oil prices and natural gas. All petroleum could go up very rapidly, and it's already starting.
They've given us this really false, this illusion over the past couple of months that the prices have dropped, right, post-Katrina. Gas prices have dropped because the government has opened up their fuel reserves, right? They've pushed a lot of fuel on the market. They've given us this illusion that things are getting better. And then, sure enough, we already know it's beginning to happen in the East right now. It's already predicted that fuel prices are going to be, what, 38% higher for those folks this year than it was last year. The government subsidy programs that help families that are under...
They're being cut.
They're being cut.
And people are even in debt from last year's utility bills. And at some point, you can't cut further.
I'm reading stories of senior citizens that are cutting back on their overly expensive pharmaceuticals in order to save money to pay the gas bill to keep their home heated to 62 degrees.
That should get our attention.
It's crazy.
Sure. Well, people have to question everything. They have to wonder why they need so much energy, how they can slash energy use, how they can save money, get more exercise, be more healthy, and not be so dependent on petroleum. And even those pharmaceuticals are made from petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're being poisoned by petrochemicals and we're sitting in cars and we're sitting in indoor environments with lots of fossil fuels surfaces, like I look around in this room, everything's either polyester or foam, some kind of petroleum. These conditions we're living under are unsustainable. They're against life.
Yeah.
So how do we deal with that when we're just trying to get through every day, pay our bills, and try to feel safe and try to get a little satisfaction or gratification from little things that are allowed us?
I want to go back for a second to the conversation about money and how we spend our money. Because how we spend our money and understanding that is one of the major avenues, I feel, for great societal change. We don't realize, we don't think about it, how when we spend our money that we're essentially reinforcing something. The universal principles of reinforcement are at play everywhere in the world. Behaviors that are reinforced will be repeated. I mean, we've learned this in a laboratory with rats and pellets, and we've seen it in the large scale in the world in our own jobs and what we get paid for. And when you spend your money, let's say you walk into a store like a Gap, for example, at the corner of Hayton Ashbury in the funky neighborhood right where I live there, and you go in and you spend whatever amount of money on a T-shirt, and it's cheap and it's nice and it's great. Well, are you acknowledging to yourself that, yeah, I'm doing this, you know, I'm buying a cheap shirt for me because I want it. I want to be able to capitalize by spending as little of my pieces of paper on a really high-quality shirt that, yeah, I know was probably made in China or who knows where for, you know, pennies on the dollar, and somehow down the line that probably affected a factory in North Carolina that could have made stuff from cotton grown locally. But I'm going to choose to ignore that. Anyway, the point being is when you spend your money, ask yourself, you know, where is it going? Who's it
and
supporting?
And where's it coming from? Is it dependent on oil for shipping thousands of miles? I think one of the most wonderful things to do that gives me a lot of pleasure anyway is to buy used items.
Yeah.
So it's really to you know, deal a blow to the corporate economy not to buy new stuff. We're talking about the absurdity of car ownership, but we can also think about how absurd it is to you know, keep the whole economy going with buying new cars.
Yeah. We're sold the notion of needing new, you know?
Well, the new car is how this economy is perpetuated.
Yeah.
If enough people, maybe a million people, stop buying new cars, they only bought used cars.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, why is that bad? Well, corporate economy goes down. But isn't it good to save and reuse and not throw things away into the landfill?
Yeah.
And to get more use out of things and not trash the planet, save money? No. Who's telling us what? So we have to think for ourselves.
As if the growth of corporate economy has helped you or I personally, or any of you listening. Let's support them. No, absolutely. I totally agree. I don't think I've God, I mean, the last few years have been an increasing transformation for me as far as my awareness of these things. I have gotten the best clothing, both Julie and myself, you know, down on Haight Street at Buffalo or Crossroads or one of those places where, you know, it's somebody else bought it and didn't work out for them, and now we can, you know, move it into somebody else's hands. I mean, that makes much more sense than my walking down to Macy's and buying something new for myself off the rack for whatever that gives me.
Well, there's exceptions to that. Sometimes we need to buy stuff, but we should
buy new underwear,
as you say. Well, you know, who are we going to be rewarding with these purchases?
Right.
We have to be very careful. Now, I'm wearing an Alliance for a Paving Moratorium shirt. The logo by the famous cartoonist Andy Singer has people rolling back the asphalt, and the vehicles are stopped. They're not moving forward to crush little animals and pollute or create urban sprawl. And underneath that, because the color combination is good, a long sleeve under that short sleeve is KMUD, KMUD FM radio from Redway in Humboldt County.
Mm.
Now, that is a true listener-supported station like KPOO. And I forked over some money to get the Alliance for a Paving Moratorium shirt made,
uh-huh,
and buying the KMUD shirt at a table because I'm trying to support good things.
Yeah.
And the one on the outside, the T-shirt, is organic cotton. And that's important, too, because cotton is the most heavily sprayed crop in the world.
Mm.
So, you know, when you're thinking of buying something new or getting something used, go for the used because the pesticides and petroleum dyes have been washed out.
Right.
Cleanliness.
Right. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco Reality Sandwich here every Thursday at noon. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist, personal coach, and healthful living advocate, and I'm here today with co-host Jan Lundberg, noted activist, oil industry expert, and musician. And anything else that you want to add to the list, Jan?
Well, I'd like people to be aware of culture change. We have some new reports there. Last night, about 3 in the morning, we let loose something called overpopulation, vegans eating plastic, and the housing bubble.
Mm. Believe it or not, culturechange.org.
Yeah. Those topics are related. And previous to that, our report was called Sudden Mitigation or Chaotic Collapse.
Hmm.
So this refers to, are we going to just wait for petroleum shortage and not have the fuel to commute to jobs or to see the trucks come into Safeway and Walmart, etc.? Or are we going to start dealing with this imminent terrible shortage situation?
The former.
Well, there are many things we can do, and I know sustainable living is one of the hallmarks of this show. Permaculture has been discussed. A great magazine is the Permaculture Activist. There are a lot of links that you can get from the culturechange.org website on these things. And we're giving talks on what we call petro-collapse, and movies are being shown. There's one, we talked about plastics earlier. There's an award-winning documentary called Our Synthetic Sea, and another movie I've been showing at audiences around the country is called The Power of Community, How Cuba Survived Peak Oil.
Yes, I heard about that. I was reading some stories about Cuba.
We should probably talk about this for a minute.
We should have a show on Cuba someday.
Well, let's consider this area. We have how many million people in the Bay Area, roughly?
7 or 8 million.
Well, maybe that is comparable to Havana, Cuba. There are 2.2 million people there. Well, they produce over 50% of their food right in the town, with community gardens, with urban farms. And this is because they lost most of their petroleum supply when the Soviet Union was collapsing and its oil industry collapsed. What we had was a situation that this country will itself be faced with. Suddenly, there isn't the petroleum for agriculture, for transportation. So Cuba had to get on bikes in a hurry, had to revamp the bus system. It was already operating with old U.S. junker cars that they kept fixing and fixing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a sight to see those old 1950s jalopies running around. But we need to think about how we can survive in the Bay Area when we have various threats. Not only do we have petrol collapse, but we have, because of our huge overpopulation, dependence on a water supply that is very precarious.
Yep.
We're talking about the levee system.
Sacramento?
Well, from Sacramento on down to the East Bay, we've got a delta ecosystem that is not designed to be turned into an engineering project to maximize the amount of fresh water for human consumption and for agriculture. But we've strained that ecosystem, and the levees are not secure. With a big earthquake or a 100-year flood, both of which are quite likely in the next several years, we're going to have a tragedy. And maybe our own New Orleans situation, like they had from Katrina and Rita.
It's unavoidable. I mean, we know that the future holds. I mean, the future is sitting here staring us right in the face. And we either decide to acknowledge it and bring it into our reality and address it and see if we are, in fact, prepared for what we can truly, really anticipate, or we get stuck in our ways of the past and bickering and fighting over, you know, budgets and building stuff and arguing, and then do what we typically do, which is bitch and complain after something happens about what we didn't do beforehand. And I think that collectively as a society, we are disserving our growth and our and I was about to say urinating on our intelligence to ignore blatant, undeniable notions about our future.
Well, this goes to something you were talking about earlier. We have a very short-term outlook and way of dealing with especially economic issues. So that short-term consideration, the short-term gain, the quarterly profit, these considerations take precedence. It runs policy.
Mm-hmm.
It drives the decisions of the corporations, of the politicians, and even us as workers and consumers who are a part of it as well. So when there's something we can do today that will help us in 10 years, such as planting a tree, or, well, shall we cut down a tree and use it to make something or burn it for fuel, these are decisions that are going to make the difference for our long-term survival. The Native Americans spoke of the seventh generation, so no decision could be made that would adversely impact the seventh generation.
Mm.
It's simply called looking ahead. But today it's, oh, that's okay if we just change the climate and distort the weather and make it impossible for species to survive and for agriculture to work. We'll just, you know, go shopping today, to hell with everybody and our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, because, hey, I can't do anything about it. I'm just one person. Oh, and I think I'll take a silver BMW instead of a blue BMW.
Right. Let me just continue to shove all this other stuff under the rug and continue on in my blissful denial of the nature of my reality. You're really saying it in your mind if you do these things completely disconnected to the impact that your behavior has upon others in the world and everything around you.
And we are all connected, truly.
We are all connected. David Suzuki did a great, the scientist, ecologist, he did gave an amazing talk at the Buena Vista Gardens earlier this year that I picked up from KPFA auction one day. And he explains so eloquently understanding the nature of our interconnectedness. And he brings it right down to air and that air is alive. And when you're in a room with other people, no matter how many there are, one person, two people, or 100 other people, within a matter of a few minutes, you have shared some air with those other people.
It's incorporated into our cells.
It's incorporated into our cells. Your body uses it to live in some way. I mean, how more of a visceral comprehension of the nature of our interdependence and interconnectedness can you get?
Well, it's in our culture. We're losing it. But what about the expression, we're all in the same boat?
Yeah.
And then you have somebody, you know, at one end of the boat drilling holes in it, you know.
Right.
And people are saying, maybe we should say something. Oh, but he's the captain. We must trust. We must be good, law-abiding citizens. We must be nonviolent. But this country was founded on overthrowing unjust rule.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln said, you have to overthrow the government once in a while.
Yeah.
Throw the rascals out.
Yeah.
And the longer people delay taking action, whether it's for the environment, for their own health, or letting the scoundrels in Washington, Sacramento, and San Francisco, we might add, selling us out and going for that short-term buck, well, we're going to have to pay the price. And when an economic recession or depression is put off through the smoke and mirrors of jacking up world trade at the expense of the environment and rights of workers, then when it finally hits, We've got a very serious, chaotic situation on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Total, maximum upheaval.
Yeah.
We won't recognize, suddenly, what we've got to work with. We're not going to have a global corporate economy. We're not going to have rule from afar. We're going to be faced with what we can do in our own local ecosystems
right.
to survive,
right.
to work with our neighbors, to get closer to our families again, unless they're living back east, which is often the case with Americans who are so far flung. So it's going to be a very different culture that will not be reliant on shopping for new stuff
mm-hmm.
and things shipped from great distances and petrochemicals and technology. It's going to be a very low-tech future, local economics. It's going to be people taking the time to work with each other to do things that today we don't have time for, like raising our own children
yeah.
or taking care of the elders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at the sheer sense of an arrangement, why aren't the grandparents educating the little ones?
Yeah.
They have something to teach them, more than the parents have to teach them in many cases. In many cases, you look at my mother, she's 85. She told me how her father created a refrigerator in the house on the farm in Idaho by digging a big hole in the kitchen floor. That was a refrigeration system.
Mm-hmm.
People need to know these things. We have to honor the elders, listen to them, retain the traditions that work, and also learn how people survived in this ecosystem from whatever indigenous knowledge remains. But the Indians have all been slaughtered. There's no trace of the Ohlone people who lived in the San Francisco Bay. Almost nothing is known about them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. I'm getting triggered on so many fronts here. Boy, where do we want to go here?
Well, so you know, we want to go in the direction of starting our own tribe,
I want to go. Well, you were getting back earlier talking about kind of the premise of the show, and we do talk about sustainability and awareness of these issues and healthful living. We're not necessarily, you know, here talking about revolution per se, although in a way that we are, because this is not about looking at these systems around us and going, you know, overthrow this or that's really bad and that should change. It's kind of looking at the whole thing holistically and going, you know what? What really does work and how do we want it to be and what systems should we be creating and how should we be being
right.
that serves us,
That's
that
why
supports
I'm here.
Our health and our happiness and our interconnectedness in the world that is at one with the undeniable laws of the universe. Now, I'm not talking woo-woo here. I'm just talking what we really, really know. and getting away from what we've been told. We cannot believe everything that we think, because our thoughts have been given to us by people outside who want us to think certain things so that we will do certain things that will profit them.
Sure, you
like buying that new car.
Yeah, you look at academia, the college experience has become a way to get a better job, to mm-hmm. earn more money. There are many people I know who have such talents who can be living a very full life now, thank you. But they've had to refrain from those activities where they could easily succeed and contribute to society, to instead hit the books, sit in lecture halls for a few years, and jump through hoops, mm-hmm. make the grade, mm-hmm. get a piece of paper, and be called an expert. And they have that credential. They can get the better job. And maybe they can be more effective as activists later. Maybe, maybe not. But we're not at a time when we can just imagine that the problems of climate change, petrol collapse, and other issues, and perhaps our personal health, can be put off.
Right.
Where years and years down the way, we can get around to dealing with them.
It's not working.
We're going to have more people. There's going to be population growth. The ecosystem is crashing already.
It's
climate change
working.
Out of control. It is definitely not working.
It's not working in our bodies. It's not working with the rates of childhood obesity, the rates of autism off the roof, the rates of people in their 30s and 40s getting heart disease, the amount of numbers of people that have asthma that is not a naturally human response to have asthma. Where did these things come from?
Garbage
in,
garbage out.
How is our human experiment doing? The purpose of this show is to talk about these things in a way where hopefully those of you that are out there just going, oh, yeah, that's important, stop in your own mind and think for a second, what's going on? What are the choices that I am making for myself? Where have I outsourced responsibility for my well-being that isn't serving me?
Well, let's give them an incentive. Healthful living is what this is about.
Healthful living is what it is about.
It's more fun when you meet people who also practice this. You get together and you have some herbal tea that you yourself plucked from the garden. And you sit down and relax, and you don't have the television on. You actually talk to somebody.
It's an amazing
thing. Or if you're alone, you can read a book. You can play a musical instrument.
It's incredible to hang around with other people that are choosing life. I wrote an article, Jan, I don't know if I told you about it, but it's on page 2 of this month's Haight-Ashbury Beat, which you can get at haightashburybeat.com if you happen to be connected to the internet or pick it up somewhere in the Haight, on healthful living. 500 words. I had to squeeze it down. And it really distills down to this notion of how are you treating your life experience? How are you treating your body? How are you treating your mind? What is your connection to whatever you believe is spirit or God? And are you aware of these things?
And are we really having fun?
I've distilled it now down to, I believe it's now 6 major buckets of area, and I'm glad you kind of brought this up. And one is the health of our body. How are we stewarding that? How are we serving our body as the CEO of this aggregate organization of cells all working together to create who you are in the mirror? What are you doing to nourish that and give it the best opportunity for life and for health and for treating you well?
And while that is true, we must remember that it is an artificial state of affairs to think that we are alone or that we can go it alone. We desperately need the care of others.
That gets me to some of the other buckets.
We need tenderness, affection, mutual support. And if you're going to go on a fast, somebody has to bring you the water and sit down and talk to you.
Right.
What are the other buckets, Martin?
The health of the mind. What are we feeding our mind? What are we allowing in to influence our thoughts and our feelings? The health of our spiritual connection, be that whatever you wished. What are your thoughts and your connection to the universe, to God, to how do you, whatever those thoughts are for you there. The health of the planet. How are we treating our environment, our earth, that around us? The health of our society, which is a large bucket, which contains really society is that describes the interconnectedness of all things, our relationships between other human beings, other living things, the groups that we make up, the structures that we set up, the organizations that we set up, the political structures, all those things are our society. How are we treating those? And the other big bucket that I'm now creating and that I'm realizing is tremendously important is the health of money. Because money is this lifeblood that we have created to exchange value between us. It reinforces certain behaviors that we decide that we want more of. It reduces others, and it places, it is something that we have put in proxy of value creation between human beings, which is something that is inherent between us all to be able to be a part of, but we've outsourced that to this thing we called money. So how are we treating that? What is it? How does it work for us? How does it inhibit us? And this system of money, this is just been a largely fascinating area of education for me in the last couple of years, the more that I've learned about what is true and what is not true in our monetary supply in the world and in the U.S. and how that's really influencing so many aspects of our society and how,
definitely
how we think and feel every day.
Rules are roost today, but tomorrow it may be a different world. People are going to be bartering.
Yeah.
People are going to be offering their time, their skills, their concern, their love. So it won't matter if you have a wheelbarrow full of $1,000 bills.
Right.
If you can't help produce food for the neighborhood, and if you don't have something to share that people can tangibly use and enjoy, well, I think we're going to see the disappearance of this whole money culture.
Mm-hmm. Things are going to change, and I don't want to come across as a doomsday kind of a person, other than to be honest and say, look at what's happening around us in our world. Look at what the government is doing. Look how it's clamping down on the old folks with the Medicare system now. Look at the pharmaceutical companies in bed with the government and all these other things that we've allowed, unfortunately, this organization of men and women who have taken over our government in bed with large corporations, feeding off the American people. Catherine Austin Fitz calls it the tapeworm. There is a tapeworm in our that is eating from the inside out, and it is feeding off of the ignorant consumers like you or I, who ignorantly just consume and do what we're told and pay our taxes and keep our head down and don't raise our voices too much for fear. Well, look around, like we were talking throughout the show, at how many things just really aren't working in our collective experiment, and that we do have massive amounts of power as an aggregate organization of humans to affect the larger scale environment in which we live by our everyday choices and how we treat ourselves, how we treat one another, how we spend our money, what do we reinforce in our outside world. If you set up your kitchen with junk and food all over the place, you're going to have ants that are going to come in there and infiltrate the system and cause disruption and disease and disservice to you. But if you keep it clean and if you're aware of those circumstances, you can alter the environment and create an environment in which they cannot exist. So as we keep an awareness on this, Reality Sandwich for me is about talking about what is really going on in our world. What are we seeing? What are we observing? No, we can't predict the future, but we can use our consciousness and our awareness of our past to stop today and look at what we see and ask ourselves, are we preparing? Are we doing the things that will help to make tomorrow better? That is our inherently human programming, is to grow and to live and to survive.
Well, if we don't, we're going to be lucky to have ants to put in between the pieces of bread to eat and survive.
There is so much more that we could talk about on the show, and I just want to wrap up with any, you know, further thoughts that you have, Jan, about what's happening in the local economy, the future, the world, anything in the last couple of minutes to share with our listeners.
I did a tour of the United States on Amtrak to talk about peak oil at various conferences. One of the conferences that I helped organize was the Petro Collapse Conference in York City.
And also Philadelphia you were on too?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say that if anyone wants to hear some of the speeches from the Petro Collapse Conference of October 5th in Manhattan, go to petrocollapse.org, www.petrocollapse.org. And we're going to have DVDs available. You can get that through that petrocollapse.org website or culturechange.org. And some of the things that we learned at that conference and at other conferences where I spoke and concertized and showed those films that we talked about earlier, I think we have two basic philosophies at loggerheads. And they are, one, the reform-oriented or technofix approach to dealing with what kinds of transportation problems we have, energy challenges, how people are going to be fed. And that is pretty much assumed to be, by the technofixers and reformists, a simply matter of investment, better technologies, more efficiency, and they don't deal with the issue of overpopulation and the fact that the whole infrastructure out there is hardwired petroleum. So then on the other side, you have people saying, my gosh, we've got a real problem here that we're not ready for, even if solar panels are the bee's knees and wind power is on the rise and the propulsion of cars can be greatly improved. These alternative systems will not be ready in time for the failure of petroleum reserves and supplies to keep up with demand. So we are at the world peak approximately of oil extraction today. That has immense consequences because the market, when it gets wind of the gap between supply and demand, is going to see the is going to cause the prices to go through the roof, and there's going to be hoarding.
Supply and demand, universal principles. We're going to see how it plays out. It's unavoidable. It's undeniable. It's what's happening in our reality. And we don't mean it to be scary, but I just want to talk to people about what's really going on in our world. You can check out Jan's information at culturechange.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I am a healthful living advocate, certified medical and clinical hypnotherapist. You can find me at healthfullivingsf.com. Feel free to send any comments about the show or anything you'd like to hear in the future. One of our favorite guests, MicroPixie, is playing this Sunday night at the Revolution Cafe. I wanted to give her a plug at 22nd and Valencia. And here's one of her tracks from her album, Alice in Stevie Wonderland. Thanks for tuning in to Reality Sandwich. We'll be here next Thursday at noon, 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco.